Dear retreatants, I would like in this afternoon conference, and I don't plan to go long. I know it gets a little tiring in the afternoons, but I would like to offer some reflections on God's plan for womanhood, and also include some thoughts on Satan's plan for womanhood. Now, that may sound very strange. Why would I be preaching Satan's plan from the pulpit? I mean it in the sense that you may have read his books, the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. It's, you know, an older devil advising a younger devil on how to go about things. And of course, the entire purpose of it is to help us understand the attacks of the devil. And and we also need to know what the enemy's plans are. If we don't have any inkling of our enemy's plans, I mean, if you imagine, you know, planning a battle and having no inkling on what the devil or the enemy would do, well, you're going to lose. So it helps to know what that plan is. And in speaking about God's plan for womanhood, I think there's going to be a little bit, or maybe a little more than a little bit, of overlap with one of Father Philip's talks, but hopefully there won't be too much repetition. But another reason that makes me think of or be more aware of the devil's plans is a thought that I had from, I was visiting, this must be about 10 years ago, at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Parish there. That was when we had our chapel in Boston, and now it's in Salem, New Hampshire. But I was speaking to a gentleman and his wife, and she very almost matter-of-factly said, you know, the devil has a plan for us too. And of course, I had heard that before, but it really grabbed my attention. The way she said it, it was so good. Yes, the devil literally has a plan for you and for me. He has a plan for families. And of course, it's to destroy them, to ruin them. So it's a good thing to be more aware of what his plans are. So I'd like to share that perspective with you as well. But to go to God's plan for womanhood, I could scarcely do better than to go to chapter 31 of Proverbs. And it's the epistle that we read in the Missal for a Holy Woman. I'm sure you've read it many times, but when I read this, I think this is literally God speaking. The Bible is the inspired word of God. God is speaking to you and saying, here's a plan, here's a blueprint for a godly woman to follow. So even though you've heard this many a time, let's just listen to it again. And it's something for you to take out periodically. I think it could apply to all three states in life in general, both, well, the religious, the married, most obviously the married, but even those few that are called to the single state, they can receive inspiration from this as well. So this is beginning with chapter 10. Who shall find a valiant woman? Far and from the uttermost coasts is the price of her. So you see what God's doing there. He's taking the adjective valiant, and he's saying this is a desirable thing for a woman to have. As she perseveres in her vocation, she is exhibiting valor. She has this adjective is present. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he shall have no need of spoils. beautiful in that. The husband trusts in the good heart that he knows his wife has, that heart of virtue that she's cultivating. He trusts in that. She will render him good and not evil all the days of her life. She hath sought wool and flax and hath wrought by the counsel of her hands. She is like the merchant's ship. She bringeth her bread from afar. She hath risen in the night and given a prey to her household and victuals to her maidens. She hath considered a field and bought it. With the fruit of her hands she hath planted a vineyard. She hath girded her loins with strength and hath strengthened her arm. She hath tasted and seen that her traffic is good. Her lamp shall not be put out in the night. Sounds like a woman, a hardworking woman, very obviously. Even a woman who sounds like a businesswoman, and she's doing it to take care of her household. She's providing well. She hath opened her hand to the needy, she hath put out her hand to strong things, and her fingers have taken hold of the spindle. She hath opened her hand to the needy and stretched out her hands to the poor. And it reminds me of a story of the very fervent Anglican convert, Elizabeth Vaughan. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. It's spelled capital V-A-U-G-H-A-N, Vaughan. And when she converted to the Catholic faith, and she was well-to-do, the family was well off. They had, I'm sure, servants and, you know, plenty of property and so forth. But when she converted, she promised God a daily holy hour. And apparently, because they were well-to-do, the local bishop authorized them to have their own family chapel where they had the Blessed Sacrament. And so she's making a holy hour daily. And of course, having servants, it makes it easier because, you know, I'm sure that's something that you could only dream of, many of you. But it shows her fervor. But she was also very hardworking, industrious. And as it turns out, six of her sons became priests. One of them a cardinal, one an archbishop, another a bishop, and three regular priests. Two or three of her daughters became nuns. And she actually died in giving birth to her youngest son, who would go on to become a priest. But in raising her children, she would regularly take them out on works of charity. You know, we're going to go help so-and-so. We're going to go help that family. So when you read about, you know, opened her hand to the needy and stretched out her hands to the poor, these children, these fortunate children, saw exemplified that Christian charity, that Catholic charity in their mother. And again, something to strive for. I mean, charity covers a multitude of sins. We all want to strive for more works of charity in our lives. She hath made for herself clothing of tapestry, fine linen, and purple is her covering. She shall not fear for her house in the cold of snow, for all her domestics are clothed with double garments. So again, that hard-working provisioning going on for her family. Her virtue is very evident. It even shows that she appreciates fine taste. There's nothing wrong. Pope Pius XII talked about that fashion is not inherently wrong for a Catholic woman to make use of, just as long as it's modest, of course, and not worldly for its own sake. But he did make a distinction in that regard, and we see it exhibited here. Strength and beauty are her clothing, and she shall laugh in the latter day. She hath opened her mouth to wisdom, and the law of clemency is on her tongue. It reminds me of a great saying I read somewhere, that life doesn't come with a manual, but it does come with a mother. And that's what mothers are. They provide that wisdom, that guidance. You've done it so often for your children. We all got it from our mother. I remember somebody telling me, and he's not even a Catholic, but he spoke glowingly of his mother, of her words of wisdom, and he said they were generally pretty short. She would just say her words of wisdom for whatever the situation. That was that, and life went on. And he understood how much he benefited from that maternal wisdom of his mother. She hath looked well to the paths of her house and hath not eaten her bread idle. Her children rose up and called her blessed, her husband, and he praised her. Many daughters have gathered together riches, thou hast surpassed them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. The woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. A godly woman doesn't make beauty her ultimate goal. It's nice when it's there, it's desirable, but her inner beauty, which comes from that life of virtue, is what shines and is most important of all. And again, so it's just so beautifully portrayed here. This is again chapter 31 of Proverbs. At last verse of this chapter, and this closes the book of Proverbs, give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Now, we didn't hear anything overtly about prayer, but we can at least deduce the idea of prayer from that. The only way she can accomplish all that is if, in fact, she is receiving God's help through her prayer life. That's the only way any of us can do it, through prayer. And it's how we obtain grace. The greatest means of grace are the Mass and the sacraments, but we need our daily prayer life to sustain us and to keep us going and draw down the graces we need in that moment, in that day, in that hour. So, as I said, let's also consider Satan's plan so that we can better avoid it, so we can better defeat it. That's the idea here. And I'm not quoting from Scripture, but just quoting from, or just gathering ideas that I've seen and heard from others. And as I was thinking about Satan's plan, it occurred to me that there's a unique hatred he has for womanhood. And I'll tell you why I think that is. He hates all of us, of course. He wants nothing more than we burn in hell alongside him. That's the whole focus of his efforts. God allows it. That's somewhat of a mystery. How does God allow this? But then we know good comes from resisting the devil. Good comes always from fighting his temptations. God allows us to be tempted. Not so we fall into sin, but we have to pray better, we have to deny ourselves more, we have to practice virtue more, we have to humble ourselves. What's there for God not to like in all that? He knows how much good is obtained through fighting temptation, and hence that is why we have temptation. The devil isn't the only source. Our fallen nature is actually our biggest enemy. But we get tempted by the world. But God allows this because he knows how much good comes from resisting temptation, overcoming temptation. So what about this hatred that the devil has for womanhood? Why does Father Casimir think that? Well, he hates womanhood because it is through a woman that the Redeemer came. And the devil understands that very well. He is devoid of moral goodness, but he can see goodness when it happens. And he knows it better in many cases than we do. And he's actively working against it. And he can see that the way God would come would be through a human mother, and that makes him hate womanhood. Some of the fathers of the church speculate that the test that the angels were all put to. Remember, God created the angels good and in a kind of heaven, but they were not seeing him face to face yet. They had to pass a test. What was this test? We don't know. But the speculation is that they were told that one day they, angelic beings far superior to humans, would have to bow down in adoration to God, who would become man. Not one of them, become man. And that was too much for the pride of Lucifer and of all the other prideful, rebellious angels. They could not abide that thought, and hence they said, we will not accept that. Another speculation is that the angels were told, one day you will have to bow in veneration before a woman who will be your queen. She will be your queen. She's not adorable. Of course, only God is adorable, but given very, very high honor. And they couldn't abide, if that was the test or part of the test, they couldn't abide that either. Their pride would not let them. And hence, now you had in the heavens the good angels and the rebellious angels, the fallen angels. And as we can see, depicted in the stained glass window of St. Michael the Archangel, his motto, Quis ut Deus, which literally means his own name. Mikael is Hebrew for who is like unto God. And we read in the Apocalypse how God commanded St. Michael to lead the good angels in this cataclysmic battle between angelic forces. This is far greater, far superior to anything on earth. And now God could have done it, of course, but God makes use of secondary causes over and over and over again. So he tells St. Michael and the good angels, I want you to exert yourselves. And these are the angels that said, if God becomes man, we will adore him. They had the humility and the love to say yes to that. Or if we will serve his mother as our queen, we will gladly do that. So there's tremendous battle now is happening in heaven between the good and the bad angels. And with that battle cry, who is like unto God, Mikael, they were cast out. And ever since, they've been warring against God and against his human creatures. You know, how it was in our catechism lessons when we were young and we were told, you know, the good angel's whispering in one ear and the bad angel is whispering in the other ear. That's a very apt illustration. Yes, we have the devil on one side, our guardian angel on the other, and they're battling it out, trying to get us to do it their way. So again, it could have been our Blessed Mother in the future, of course, having something to do with that test. And they would not pass it, the rebellious angels. And they became the fallen angels. Another reason why there's a unique hatred of Satan for womanhood, I believe, is shown by the devil tempting Eve first. He went after her first. Unfortunately, he succeeded. But he could see the good that Eve was capable of doing. He knew that she was the mother of the human race, and he was able to win over her. He conquered over her. That's why Genesis chapter 3, verse 15 cannot possibly apply to Eve when it says, "The woman, God, I will set up enmity between thee and the woman, and she shall crush thy head." He had just defeated Eve. He went after her first. So there had to be another woman, indeed the second Eve, the one who would reverse her name with the Ave and say yes to God. Another reason why Satan hates womanhood, and this must be one of the most important reasons of all, and that is because mothers bear life. And the devil can't see the future. Only God sees the future, but the devil knows that with each human life, there's that possibility of another soul that can escape his clutches. Of course, he's going to work hard to bring that soul down, but I believe that is why abortion and even artificial birth control, they are diabolical in the sense that it's the devil waging his battle against human life. He wants to keep souls out of heaven. He wants to prevent them if he can. And that's why he has to have this special hatred of motherhood. Again, he doesn't know the future. He can tell how things are going better than we can, but he doesn't know it. And so again, the fewer human lives, then there's fewer people for him to work on. I know you could convert that in another way, say if you know, the more human beings there are, the more possibilities of souls falling into hell. I guess you can make that argument too. Again, these are more of my fruit of my meditations or my thoughts, but it's pretty clear, it's pretty obvious that he hates womanhood and what it stands for. And another part of Satan's hatred is his inspiring women to try to go compete with men in every way possible. And don't we see this with modern feminism? And again, I'm in no way putting down those women that have to work for economic reasons. It's unfortunate it has to be that way in some cases. And there's also vocations and professions that definitely need women. I'm thinking of women doctors, women teachers, especially in the lower levels. That's a necessity. But feminism makes no distinctions, just says all to all women, if you want, get out of the family, get out of the home, go work your career, and compete with the men. And instead of complimenting men, now we're in a competition, even a war even. That's not God's plan, that's Satan's plan. And then, I believe, with the evil and the insanity of transgenderism, that's just all part of the logical progression from abandoning God's plan to do whatever you want, try to be whatever you want. And no matter what gift God gave you, if he gave you the gift of womanhood, you may throw that away or try to. You can never throw it away, but try to throw it away. Or if you're a man, try to throw away that gift of manhood and try to be something else. This is Satan's plan. Because it denies nature, it denies reality. It tells people to be unhappy who God created them to be instead of accepting who they are and the gifts that God gave to them. Feminism, modern feminism, teaches women to deny the power that they have. And, you know, one example that just came to my mind is, let's say you have a room full of men. They're just maybe, you know, sitting around visiting, drinking libations or whatever. Just men in the room. And if a woman comes in into the room for whatever reason, and a woman is conscious of her dignity, of her role, of her gift, all of those men are going to just all of a sudden be gripped by that. She's there. I need to honor her. But feminism wants nothing to do with that. It tells her, you try to go act like one of the guys. And what respect will she have then? It's by honoring the gift that God has given to her that she wins that respect, that honoring, at least is more apt to do so. So again, male and female, God created them, and that's only two genders, and there will always be only two. And each one is a gift for that person to have and to use and to bring about good. Not denying who they are, praising God for the gifts that they have been given and praying for the grace to use it properly. Another very much a plan of Satan is indecent dress. And don't we see that just all over society? Just horrifying fashions. We're reminded of what the words of little Jacinta at Fatima. Certain fashions will be offended. Well, she was transmitting this message from Our Lady. Certain fashions will be introduced that will gravely offend my divine son. We've seen that happen. We are living in that awful reality. And it's going to take heroic efforts to dress modestly in a world that is so immodest as a rule, that has no regard for the dignity of the body. You know, things that we value, we cover. This is a beautiful analogy. I remember reading that when the priest brings the chalice to the altar, it's covered with a chalice veil because it's sacred. It promotes the honoring of the chalice as the vessel in which the precious blood of Jesus will be at Holy Mass. And yes, it is held up, obviously, without the chalice veil once the once the consecration takes place. But you know, when it's otherwise, it is there's that veiling of it. It promotes an honoring of that thing. And that is what modesty does. It promotes the true honoring. Again, we have a fallen human nature, and to dress immodestly is to deny original sin. And this is more so for men than for women, but it works for both. For men to be drawn to the immodesty. And they have no excuse, of course. They have to practice custody of the eyes. In any case. So we can see again does the devil have a plan for womanhood? I think I've just explained it. I've recounted some ways in which he wants that to happen. I truly believe that among the women the devil hates the most are religious sisters, those who are called to that highest of states. Because the devil knows how much good a religious vocation brings about. And it happens always. You know, when you see a nun in her full habit, it just absolutely commands, in a good way, respect and honoring. You see it to this day, fortunately, for the most part. And we see one of the most evil fruits of Vatican II was the nuns taking or stopping wearing their habits. When they did that, they're saying, please stop respecting me for my vocation. That's how important clothes are. You know that old saying, clothes make the man? It works here too. You know, I was just looking at some statistics. Right around the mid-60s, there were over 650 religious nuns in the Diocese of Spokane alone. Providence Hospital, Sacred Heart Hospital, initially was staffed only by the nuns. And then eventually, you know, as they grew, they had to hire, obviously, lay women. But can you imagine how many times you would see those religious that were in the active orders, you know, the nursing orders, the teaching orders, you'd see nuns on a consistent basis. And they've all disappeared. Well, our sisters haven't disappeared. And thank God we're still having young women be inspired to follow the higher way, accepting the call. And again, the devil will do anything to destroy a religious vocation, a religious sister. He knows that she's a spiritual mother, and in so many ways will influence souls for the better. You know, a married woman, she has her own brood, her own children. You know, and she influences others as well. We've just read about that in Proverbs, but far-reaching is the effect of a religious sister. Even one that's cloistered, I would even say almost more the one that is cloistered. Saint Therese saw herself as a spiritual mother. Imagine if the devil could have derailed a vocation like hers. How many millions of souls would have been adversely affected? And I'm probably understating it. Those that are single women, if indeed a specific calling from God, you know, it can happen. You do not have that calling to the religious life or to the married life, but it is a true vocation. And you still practice those virtues as explained in the book of Proverbs. And you as a woman, as a single woman, inspire men by your virtuous living. And you have your own unique callings. It could be a teacher. It could be a researcher. It could be a lay missionary. That is the work that you do. And it is a maternal thing as well. It's a type of motherhood, not in the way for obviously the married woman, but it is a maternal thing. And one last thing that I believe is part of the devil's plan for womanhood, as a matter of fact, this is a plan, part of his plan for everybody, to neglect prayer. The devil hates to see you on your knees. The devil will do anything to keep you from getting on your knees in prayer. You know why? Because he's being defeated whenever you are praying. In some way, he is suffering defeat. And Satan knows how desperately we need those graces to see things clearly. Remember what actual grace does. It enlightens our mind and strengthens our will so that we can see what we have to do and also have the strength to do it. That's actual grace. We need tons of it. So, does the devil derail you from your prayers? Don't give him the victory. Too many things depend on that kneeling position in prayer. So I just wanted to share these few thoughts with you and be encouraged. Again, know that power of God. I know I just illustrated the devil's plan, and there seems to be so much success of it. But let me tell you a secret. The devil is the biggest loser of all time, and he knows it. Yes, he will win victories of dragging souls down, and yes, that. But personally, he is the biggest loser of all. He knows he's going to lose in the end. Know the power of God. You know, Satan's power is a frightful thing. It can really scare us. But you know, one thing we should know of far better than that is the infinite power of God, and we should know the power of Our Lady. I love how St. Louis explains in True Devotion to Mary how the devil would much rather be humiliated and punished and conquered by God, but what really gets his goat, really what pierces him and hurts him the most, is when the humble handmaid of Nazareth does it, using the power that God has given to her. She shall crush thy head. Yes, God can do it. He can do all things, but it's God's way where he's going to say to his mother, "Mother, you've been crushing him in some many significant ways since your Immaculate Conception, and you've crushed his power many a time, and you will have the final crushing of his wicked head at the very end, and he's going to have to like it." Well, he won't like it. He's going to have to accept it. So know you're on the winning side. Yes, there's going to be many trials and temptations and battles and difficulties, but we should never forget whose side we are on. We have God. We have our Blessed Mother, and with their help, we can accomplish all that needs to be done.